The brother of the man who built the atomic bomb stood in the snow at 8,000 feet, trying to figure out how to keep cattle alive through a Colorado winter. Frank Oppenheimer, once a Manhattan-born physicist working on uranium separation for the Manhattan Project, now wore rancher's overalls and mucked-out stalls. His crime? Joining the Communist Party in 1937 to fight fascism, then lying about it when fear overtook him. The FBI had ended his career, denied his passport, and driven him from the laboratories where he'd studied cosmic rays. Yet this exile would become the crucible for something extraordinary, a museum that would transform how millions experience science. The Exploratorium, opening in 1969 in San Francisco's Palace of Fine Arts, didn't just display science behind glass, it invited people to touch, break, and discover. Frank's journey from privilege to blacklist to revolutionary educator reveals how sometimes our greatest contributions emerge not despite our detours, but because of them. Frank grew up among Rembrandts and Van Goghs in a Manhattan apartment where intellectual rigor met artistic sensibility. While his brother Robert became an unctuous, repulsively good little boy, Frank dismantled bicycle brakes and conducted dangerous electrical experiments. At the Ethical Culture School, his teacher Augustus Clock trusted young Frank to design the electrical system for the new laboratory. This wasn't instruction, it was trust. Europe taught Frank that knowledge carries moral weight. At 9, witnessing French occupation of Germany's Rhineland, he grasped how power operates. By 1934, visiting Hitler's Germany, he felt the menace. At Cambridge's Cavendish Laboratory, he absorbed Rutherford's approach: freedom, individual attention, hands-on experimentation. In Florence, studying radioactive decay by day and Renaissance art by night, Frank discovered that both artists and scientists can become trapped by technique, losing sight of what they're trying to express. The light of the first flash penetrated and came up from the ground through one's lids. Frank lay face down 5 miles from Trinity, beside Robert. When the purple cloud hung suspended, the brothers embraced and said, "It worked." Frank had developed racetracks, magnetic devices separating deadly U-235 from harmless uranium. Yet Hiroshima shattered them. Robert told Truman, "I feel I have blood on my hands," prompting Truman to call him a crybaby. The physicists who'd unlocked atomic power now faced an inescapable truth. There was no physical defense against what they'd created. The only solution was social invention. Education, international cooperation, a fundamental shift in how humans related to destructive knowledge. After Nagasaki, Frank and 500 Manhattan Project scientists advocated for international atomic energy control, drawing FBI scrutiny. Though he'd left the Communist Party in 1940, disillusioned by authoritarianism and Stalin's Hitler Pact, his past membership made him suspect. When a reporter exposed him, Frank lied. Before testifying to the House Un-American Activities Committee, he admitted the lie to his University of Minnesota department head and offered his resignation. While Frank testified, refusing to discuss others' politics despite Richard Nixon's pressure, Minnesota accepted his resignation. What followed was systematic destruction. Physics departments recruited him, then rejected him weeks later. An FBI agent revealed why. "Don't you want an academic job? You have to cooperate." Unable to work in America or teach abroad, Frank retreated to Blanco Basin, Colorado, a cabin at 8,000 feet with no electricity. The Manhattan intellectual learned ranching from books while his children attended a one-room schoolhouse. The FBI visited so often, Frank's son nicknamed them the hard-boiled eggs. This brutal exile taught Frank to create extraordinary experiences from nothing. When Frank was hired at Pagosa Springs High School in 1957, he seemed like he'd dropped in from Mars. He wore a tie, which he used to clean the blackboard, and devised wild experiments, taking students to junkyards to disassemble carburetors, making abstract physics tangible. His students, many Hispanic from ordinary origins, began winning science fairs across Colorado and Wyoming, stunning Denver-area competitors.
By 1959, he'd become a research associate at the University of Colorado. By 1961, despite anti-communist regents, he secured tenure with support from Hans Bethe and George Gamow. Yet physics had become conformist and status-focused. Frank transformed the introductory physics lab into a library of experiments, 80 demonstrations always available, no lab manual, just conversations encouraging questions. Though his methods won national recognition, the library didn't survive after he left. He realized such experiences needed to reach beyond academia, into a space where anyone could walk in off the street and discover that science wasn't remote formulas, but immediate wonder. In 1967, Frank moved to San Francisco to create a Woods of Natural Phenomena, where people could reconnect with the physical world. After visiting European science museums on a Guggenheim fellowship, he saw what was missing. Most were musty mausoleums demanding hushed reverence. Frank wanted something radically different, an adventure park where you'd race around, talk loudly, and touch everything. He found his space in Bernard Maybeck's Palace of Fine Arts, a pseudo-Roman ruin from the 1915 Panama Pacific Exposition, and charmed his way into a dollar-a-year lease by May 1969. The Exploratorium got assembled like an old-fashioned barn-raising. Wolfgang Panofsky loaned accelerator pieces from Stanford. "We both agreed that physics was grubby," Panofsky said, "and it shouldn't be pretty and under glass." With just $50,000 from the San Francisco Foundation, Frank, Jackie, and their son Mike transformed the space. They coined Exploratorium because museum seemed too static. Frank's limited budget forced creative solutions. The acquisition process was opportunistic, like biological evolution. Some exhibits went extinct immediately, others endured. Most important was the shop at the entrance, where visitors could see and smell creation. Exhibits were built as Jeeps rather than Ferraris, pragmatically robust, designed to withstand punishment. When staff tried making exhibits unbreakable, Frank would say, "Let them break it. They learn something from that." Bob Miller's sun painting, a spectacular palette of pure colors extracted from sunlight, created otherworldly landscapes at the museum's entrance. True to the Exploratorium's philosophy, the sculpture only came alive when actual sunlight broke through San Francisco's fog. This captured Frank's belief that art and science were inseparable. As he put it, "One cannot truly understand nature without also discovering the ways in which it is related to human experience and feeling." Frank carried his flute everywhere, encouraged staff to display their talents, and filled his home with art, including Picasso's. Aesthetics should guide decision-making, he believed, not merely decorate. Frank explored how science had lost its proper societal role. His concern wasn't weighing antibiotics against atom bombs, but how scientific understanding could reshape how people felt about themselves, nature, and each other. He believed science's sentimental fruits, ways of thinking applicable to nearly every realm, were its most important contributions. These ideas connected him to Einstein, Bohr, and Schrödinger, who recognized that scientific principles reflected social values. Racial equality mirroring symmetry principles behind relativity, democracy depending on accepting constant change. Science's most obvious fruit is its effect on fear. As a child, Frank performed rituals around a bronze dog figurine, believing bad things would happen if he didn't. Realizing the dog was powerless brought enormous relief. Science had freed him from superstition. Another fruit is nature's unity. Newton showed apples fall for the same reason planets orbit, erasing the boundary between heaven and earth. Darwin revealed we're related to all living things, eliminating biological basis for class distinctions. Most surprising was symmetry as the guiding force behind natural laws, fundamental truths that don't change. These symmetries extend to human fairness. Dividing a resource equally means it shouldn't matter who gets which piece. Frank believed understanding such symmetries could reveal that race, nationality, appearance, and economic status make no fundamental difference. By 1985, Frank was dying of lung cancer at home. He approached death like a scientist, fully conscious, discussing physical sensations as just another phenomenon. When he died on February 3rd, the Exploratorium lived on. His influence spread globally. The museum has shaped 90% of U.S. science museums and 70% worldwide, with spin-offs from Beijing to Moscow to Saudi Arabia. Frank wielded absolute power while maintaining paradoxical anarchy. Staff described following him like grabbing onto a rope and being dragged along in the dust. Unpredictable and childlike, he could be dismissive or uncommonly kind. He delighted when visitors used exhibits in unintended ways, girls letting their hair stream up in the Bernoulli blower's air current. Whether discoveries were right mattered less than their authenticity. In his 1960 speech to Pagosa Springs graduates, Frank shared his philosophy. Fulfillment comes from continually taking things seriously, but not too personally. His life embodied this wisdom, from building weapons of mass destruction to raising cattle in exile to creating a palace where millions discover that science is immediate, tactile, and joyous. The Exploratorium proves that our deepest failures can become our greatest teachers, and that wonder is the most revolutionary force we possess.